Hello, and welcome to the business of podcasting. I'm your host, Craig Hewitt from Podcast Motor. Here each week, I'll sit down with one of the leaders in podcasting to find out how they're using this fantastic form of content marketing to connect with their audience, grow their brand, and ultimately build their business. If you're not already podcasting, then today is the day to start, and here we'll show you how. Okay, let's get on with the show. All right, on the show this week, we have Jim Harold. Jim, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for inviting me to the program.
Absolutely. No, it's my pleasure. You know, we are excited to start season two of the Business of Podcasting podcast and really want to dig into a lot more what we saw in the first set of episodes in the first season, where we're talking to people who have and run successful businesses, mostly online businesses, and are using their podcast to really network and market and reach out to folks in their audience and in different ways. And I think Jim is going to tell, you're going to tell a really interesting story today about your podcast and its genesis and kind of how it's taken your business forward. So you want to give the folks who are listening a bit of background on, you know, kind of where you're coming from and what your show is all about?
Sure. I started podcasting back in 2005. So I guess in some way, I'm one of the pioneers, but you know, sometimes they say the pioneers get an arrow in the back.
Yeah.
But actually, it's worked out pretty well for me. I started in 2005 podcasting as a hobby because I had gone to school for broadcasting, ended up working in the industry, but on the advertising sales side. And I saw all these cool people getting to do all this neat stuff in front of the mic. And I thought, you know, I'm never going to get to do that. I was in my mid-30s, had a wife and two kids and a mortgage and the whole thing. And I heard about this thing called podcasting, Adam Curry and Leo Laporte and so forth. And I listened to them. I'm like, oh, I could never do. Those guys are real pros. I could never do what they do. Then I heard some of the homemade podcasts. And I said, well, I could do that, though. Mm-hmm. So I started as a hobby and kind of dipped in, dipped out for a couple of years. Got super serious in 2008. By 2009, I had my first sponsor. Then I increased the amount of podcasts I did. And lo and behold, I was able to go full time with it. What is it now? It's going to be 4 years at the end of this month. And it has basically become my business. Now, I podcast on all things the paranormal, on ghosts, UFOs, those kind of things. Because when I started podcasting, part of it was to scratch my broadcasting itch. But the other part was I've got to figure out something where I have to create a show that I would want to listen to. Something that at the time I didn't think was out there. And it was a serious show on the paranormal where I would interview people, authors and experts about their various theories. And that's what I ended up doing and added a podcast called Campfire in 2009 where people call in with their true ghost stories. In 2011, I started a Plus Club, which is premium content, and that's one of my big revenue generators in addition to advertising and the books that I've been able to do because of the podcast. So really, podcasting has been the business, the hub of the business, and has made everything else possible. So yeah, I love talking about ghosts and those kind of things, but I've kind of got a split personality. I've got that programming side.
Sure, yeah.
And then I've got the sales side, the business side. It's almost like a little radio station in my head in the programming and sales departments fighting each other all the time. Now, not really. Not really. But you can see I do have a business mind about it, although I very much enjoy what I do every day.
Yeah, yeah. So your show is a little bit different than what we see as like our typical customer, if you will. Our typical customer at Podcast Motor is a business, an independent sort of online entrepreneur.
Sure.
style business is kind of sure. our classic kind of profile. And they use the podcast in conjunction with writing, you know, blog content and YouTube videos and things like that. You have, I would suppose you have a much bigger show in terms of downloads than most of our typical customers. Can you give me a perspective of kind of what your monthly volume is like for just the paranormal podcast?
Well, you know, we're looking at between 150,000 and 200,000 downloads a month for the paranormal podcast, kind of similar with the Campfire program. And again, when you can, but when you compare that to traditional radio, for example, that's relatively small.
Mm-hmm.
I live in Cleveland, Ohio, in that area, and I work for stations here. And one of those stations might, what they call Cume, 500,000 listeners a week. Or 400,000. So really, it's not. I think with podcasting, it's you don't count the people you reach the people who count for whatever your business is.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes people get too hung up about the numbers. So for example, in your example, someone in the online marketing space, they may not have a couple hundred thousand downloads a month. However, if they get 1,000 downloads a month of the right people, that could be more powerful than what I'm doing. Really, that is the power of podcasting, is the niche. You know, the example that I always use is, let's say that you're a bottle cap collector and you love bottle cap collecting and you want to be known as the world's most foremost expert on bottle cap collecting. Well, there's people out there who are also interested in bottle cap collecting. And I bet you, if you start producing a podcast, a high quality podcast on bottle cap collecting, stick with it for a year. I bet by the end of that year, your profile will be much, much bigger in bottle cap collecting. And in something, quote, silly like bottle cap collecting, I don't know, that might actually be very lucrative if you become a broker or a trader or someone who connects people and may be able to do arbitrage or different things. It might sound silly to some people, but that specific thing might end up being extremely lucrative, and it could all surround specifically by something like a podcast. And then maybe you start an online course, and the online course is how to find great bottle caps, you know, and use these methods to find bottle caps. So you can use the podcast as a hub to create other business opportunities. On the flip side, I think that if you are, and we talked a little bit before, I come from radio and I worked in radio for years. And you would have these people that would pay several hundred dollars a month in a medium-sized market like Cleveland to get a show on the radio at 7 a.m. on a Saturday. And what they would do, they might be financial consultants, they might be medical people, they might be car mechanics, whatever it might be, and they would leverage that radio show as a calling card for their business. Hey, I'm on the radio, therefore I'm an expert. Therefore, legitimacy. I know I'm talking. Yeah. Exactly. You can do exactly the same thing, I think, with a podcast. I think that's something that's largely gone kind of unmined. And I think that's something that people need to look at. And it's interesting because I think a big part of the reason it's gone unmined is because most of podcasting to date has been kind of a do-it-yourself situation.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these people who are in these situations, and I even put up a podcast course for people who want to just learn themselves. But most people who are business people don't have time to edit and post and all of this, so it never happens. So I do think there's a value in an organization like yours that basically says, you know, we'll do the heavy lifting and help you get this together and get it published on a regular, consistent basis. That's why I think a lot of people haven't taken advantage of this. But I think there's a huge opportunity there. Whatever you do to amplify it. And I will say one other thing. I think it's fantastic for networking. So let's say that you are in the financial advisement area. And not only do you want to get a client base, but you want to become known in that area.
Mm-hmm.
One strategy, and I'm sure you've talked about this on the program, is to reach out to people who are a little bit higher than you in the industry and start getting interviews. And, you know, for example, let's say that you, he's probably too big of a name, Buffett, but somebody like that.
Yeah, sure.
And you call him, say, hey, could I pick your brain for a half hour? Well, they're not going to listen to you. But if you say, can I interview you for an hour, whoever that person you admire might be, you're going to have a lot better chance. And you can almost use kind of a stair step approach. And I've done this, is I will interview, when I first started out, I knew nobody in this field. Now I can basically get anybody, including New York Times bestsellers, people that have their own TV shows. I can get all those people. But what I started was, is I picked some authors and a couple bigger names, but not huge names, and got them. And then when I would reach out to somebody, I would refer to that person, and that would get me a person, a next step up. And you kind of use those people as references to kind of walk up that ladder of importance in your particular industry to get interviews. And by the way, all this time you're networking with those people. I think that's something that people just don't grok. They don't think about podcasting, the tremendous networking opportunity that it provides.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially in an online world, you know, talking to someone, quote, on the phone has lost a lot of its, a lot of frequency, I guess. You know, not a lot of people who are connected online or, you know, just virtually are talking on the phone. And the opportunity to, like you say, pick up the phone and I'm talking to you for 30 minutes today. There's a lot of rapport that we're building and a lot of dialogue and a lot of ideas that are being shared. I think that just the medium is really powerful and the amount of information that it relays. And just love the stair-step approach you talk about with getting guests on and higher quality and higher profile guests. We've done a similar thing where, you know, we have some customers who are really high profile, and being able to leverage those names when talking to prospective customers for our business has really helped. And I think the same thing with your podcast can definitely be true. Like you said, get as far as you can get by yourself, and then use the previous guests on the show. And I like to ask directly, you know, hey, who else do you think I should talk to about this that would provide a little bit different angle or a little bit different perspective on whatever topic we're talking about?
No, absolutely. And I can't think of anything else that you can do where you can do that so relatively easy. Now, that's assuming that you do a good interview and you're prepared and all of those sort of things. But I think for the purposes of our conversation, we'll take that as a given. But you've got to make sure you're prepared and that you ask intelligent questions. And because I do think one of the Well, it's funny because I have a number of podcasts, and one of them I do is on classic TV, and that's almost a hobby podcast. But I've interviewed some fairly big name actors, the Don Wells, who played Marianne on Gilligan's Island and so forth. And I think there's some reluctance with those TV stars when they hear the word podcast, and at the end they'll say something like, wow, you ask good questions. And I think to myself, well, I would hope that I do. I've been doing this for 11 years.
It's kind of my job. But
yeah. But the point is, I think there's a certain, just yesterday I interviewed a psychic who has a national television show, and they have a book out with HarperCollins, and they go, oh, you're very professional. And it's like, well, yes, this is my job. But the thing is I think there is a certain stigma, a little bit of a stigma with podcasts. So I think you've really got to make sure, especially when you get somebody high powered on, you want to make sure that they say, oh, this guy or this girl or this woman knows what they're doing. And they kind of forget the whole podcast thing in the first 1 or 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that, with the caveat that it's not terribly complicated. You know, we like to the recording and the equipment part and all that is not terribly complicated. A lot of people come to us and say, I want to start a podcast. I have no idea what I'm doing. You know, it just seems like way too much work and there's way too much involved. And I tell them, you need a $39 piece of software to record a Skype conversation and a $60 microphone. And that's all you need.
And it's gotten so much easier.
You can record 90% of the studio quality audio that music people are doing and you know, big name podcasters are doing with just that equipment.
If that's right.
Good internet, an Audio Technica mic, and call recorder for Skype, you can get as far as you need to go in podcasting. I think a lot of people really say, oh, you know, I have to go up a sound booth and I have to learn Adobe Audition and all this kind of stuff. I say, forget it. Just record it, put it out there, get some traction, and then worry about some of the finer details later. But I think so many people look at the mountain to climb and don't get started because they think it's so big.
Yeah, you know, I think the mic you might be referencing is the ATR2100, which is a fantastic mic. And it's, like you said, about $60 on Amazon. And the truth is, you know, for the first 6 years that I did this, I used a USB mic. I used a piece of software to record. I didn't even have a mixer, you know, and those are the days that really have made these days possible. So, yes, I agree. I think that the equipment has gotten cheaper. I think it's gotten better. And yeah, really you're talking about a time investment. The money investment is very nominal, even the hosting. If you look at something like a Libsyn or Blueberry, either mm-hmm. one, excellent companies, you're talking about $7 a month. you know, I mean, we're not talking beans. Yeah, we're not talking big money here. It's really the time investment. How much time can you invest in doing this? And that's where a company like yours helps to offload some of that stress of the time commitment.
So, Jim, let me ask you a question. Would the biggest complaint or objection that we get from people is that they can't make money with their podcast. Let's say they don't have an underlying business and they want to try and directly monetize their show with advertising. You have a series of large shows, so I know you do a fair percentage of your revenue from directly from advertising. Can you talk a little about what the models are that you're participating in, just kind of generally? Are they kind of PPC or per thousand listens, or do you have like fixed deals and just generally as much as you're able to talk about what the landscape there looks like?
Well, I kind of use a mosaic approach. If it's a good advertiser, obviously for me, the best scenario is CPM. Per thousand. Yeah, it's cost per thousand, where somebody takes however many downloads I get per episode and pays me a set figure per thousand downloads. That's nice because it's very reliable. As opposed to a CPA deal, which is a cost per action. Most of my advertising is CPM based, but I do have some CPA players where I get a referral fee for every sale. And those have worked to be, some of them have worked out to be actually fairly lucrative. Some of them are like fill-ins if I don't have a CPM deal in place. Mm-hmm. So I kind of, quite frankly, if anything, that's an area, having been in advertising and sales, I kind of, for the longest time, I felt I dropped the ball on because I was kind of sick of advertising sales.
Right. Yeah.
But
sure,
really,
sure.
This year in particular, I've really said, there's not going to be a show that goes out without some kind of spot, either a CPM or a CPA. That's just the way it's going to be, because it's very similar to an airplane with empty seats. Once it takes off, you've lost that revenue. Now, in terms of getting the advertisers, there's a couple different ways that I do it. I am helped a little bit by my sales experience in advertising, but I have a third party that I work through for a good percentage of my ads, and they handle the sales, the placement. They send me talking points, and then I do the live, the quote live read off of that. But also, I've been having more and more success of approaching advertisers directly. Mm-hmm. And frankly, one of the strategies that I've employed to pretty good success is find the chief marketing officer of a company and send them a tweet. And then they see that, again, I don't have Ashton Kutcher numbers on my social media or Katy Perry numbers, but I think on Twitter, for example, I have about 14,000 followers. So typically the marketing person that I follow will have 2,000 or 3,000 followers, and that's for some big companies. And I think they see that I have a decent following and say, well, take it to the next step. And I've even had cases where, I will go to the marketing officer, they will contact their ad agency, then the ad agency will reach out to me. So that's been a really good venue for me and a good method to try to reach some of those businesses. But very respectful, just, hey, your product seems to be a great fit. Is there a way we can have some conversations? Just very respectful, not tweeting the person 7 times a day, but just a tweet here or there. And
yeah,
if they answer, great. If they don't, that's okay too. I think that as I see my business right now, the greatest percentage of my revenue is probably from my Plus Club. And then advertising is second, and my books are third. But I mean, I've put out 4 books based on the Campfire Show, and each one has been a Kindle number one bestseller. So that is a nice revenue stream. And I've got a fifth book coming out in the fall. Plus, I just commissioned an artist to do an adult coloring book.
Oh, cool.
Based
That's
on
fantastic.
The Campfire stories. But you see, what I'm doing is you take the podcast and then you have brand extensions on
mm-hmm.
it. So I try to think of it as in a very business-like way, even though, again, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. I love your concept of reaching out to folks on social media as just an outreach and communication tool. I think a lot of people look at social media as you know, a way to post pictures of their cat or whatever. But I agree. I've reached out to dozens of people directly on social media just to start the conversation. And I think it's a nice, like you said, non-threatening, easy, but very professional way to sort of try and get in touch with someone. And then if they want to take the conversation offline, if you will, it's a real easy transition from there because you've already built some rapport.
Absolutely.
And they can kind of qualify you, like you said, with your 14,000 Twitter followers pretty easily. Take a look at some of your history and kind of grade you ahead of time before the conversation really even starts.
And one of my favorite lines to use is I'm fortunate because when I first started the show, I came up with the idea of using the very arcane name for the show, the Paranormal Podcast. I was lucky. I got in early and I thought, I'm not the brightest bulb, but I thought, well, it's paranormal. It's a podcast. What can I call
it? There you go.
But now all I've got to say to a potential advertiser is, you know, if you're interested in reaching people who are into this space, and have this interest in it, just go to Google, your Google, not mine. Just type in the words paranormal podcast and see who comes up number one. And that's a lot of social proof. You know, that's a great thing to have, is just to be able to say, don't take my word for it. Just go to Google, type in two words, paranormal podcast. You tell me what comes up.
Right, right. How much does sort of like brand alignment with your message and your audience play into who you try to reach out to as far as advertisers?
You know, it's funny because really, and this is where there's a little bit of a disconnect, because you would think, for example, if you're doing a show about, let's say, medicine, and you're doing a show about practice management for physicians, the business side, you could think of a lot of advertisers, specifically very niche. In my case, there isn't a one-to-one, you know, fit. In other words, it wouldn't be... it wouldn't be something that ghost meters or something.
Right, you know, UFO manufacturers.
Yeah. So I just reach out to larger brands. You know, I know the demographics of my audience. They typically skew 25 to 54. The highly engaged ones actually skew females, surprisingly. When I look at my social media pages and so forth, the most highly engaged users, even though it's a 50-50 split, it's probably 65% female.
Hmm.
So I try to find items. The way I tie it back is items that I use and that I would feel good about endorsing. And I've turned down advertisers because, you know, you could pick up a dollar today and lose, or you could pick up a dime today, I should say, and lose dollars tomorrow because you aligned yourself with something that's not on the up and up, or not not really something that's kosher.
And I think that it has to be something that at least in some way is going to sort of gel with your audience too.
Yeah.
I think that's the nice thing about proactively reaching out to specific organizations or products that you know it's cool with the people that listen.
Yeah, I actually only reach out to things that say, I could use that. I want to use that. That looks really cool. I feel really good about endorsing that. So I kind of take you know, most salespeople in radio, they'll put ads on for anything. They don't. I kind of take the opposite thing. I only want, my qualifier is, would I use this? Would I want this? Would I buy this? And then if I can answer those questions, yes, I can feel good about telling my audience, hey, you really ought to try this. It's a good product. And basically everything that I advertise, I use in one way or another. Or if it's something where I can't use it, it's something I would use if I were in the situation that I would need that particular thing.
Yeah, yeah. Makes a lot of sense, man. So, Jim, do you have anything else you want to share with folks out there about podcasting or advice or you know, things you've learned along the way?
Well, I would just say stick with it. If you're thinking about starting a podcast and thinking, oh, it's too crowded, there are too many people out there doing it now, or you think, oh, I want this to go viral and have 3 million downloads like YouTube, first of all, realize podcasting, in my view, unless you're Adam Carolla or you know, one of the real biggies, Serial or things, it typically doesn't work like that. It is a long-term play. So if you're... space is crowded. Don't worry about that. Just put out good content and do it consistently. I bet you if you do a podcast for a year, you'll outlast 80, 90% of the people that start at the same time. So don't worry about there's too many people doing it or You know, how am I going to stand out? I think persistence is key. And having done it for 11 years now, I think I can say something about persistence. And I think if you keep doing good content, people will find you and they'll latch on. And over time, your audience will grow. I think podcasting is a tremendous way to get your message out, a tremendous way to find other ways to make revenue. And I think it's only going to get bigger, bigger, and bigger. So jump on board and I think stick with it and you'll be glad.
Awesome. Awesome. Jim, thanks so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it. Jim, can you tell folks where they can find out more about you and the shows that you're up to?
Absolutely. Go over to jimharold.com, J-I-M-H-A-R-O-L-D.com. If you're interested in things like ghosts and UFOs and Ouija boards, and somebody one time called me Art Bell meets NPR, and I really like that. So check that out. And if you love ghost stories and those kind of things, not for business, obviously, but in your leisure time, you can check those out there as well. And there's links to the books and everything. And Craig, I appreciate your time and best of luck in all of your endeavors.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jim. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. To find out more and check out all of the previous episodes, head on over to podcastmotor.com/show. I'd love to hear from you. If you can leave a rating and review in iTunes, please let me know what you think of the show. The ratings and reviews help us get more exposure to the show and bring on more awesome guests. All right, we'll see you next time.